the studio with me is Francine Hunter McGivern, the proprietor, the curator of CR10 in Linlithgow, just a little bit south of Hudson here. CR10 named after the county route it's on, County Route 10, right?
Yeah.
How do you describe your space there?
Yes. It's now a non-for-profit this year, which is called the Frank Institute.
The Frank Institute. Mm-hmm. Where does that name come from?
Well, I spent quite a long time trying to figure out, you know, a name that I could live with.
Uh-huh.
And after many lists, I decided on the Frank Institute, which is sort of a riff of Marcel Duchamp, Rose C'est la Vie. So okay. I'm Frank.
Oh, you're Frank.
I'm Frank.
Well, you are. You tend to be frank in conversation.
Frank, very frank.
So there's no
people
there's
who
no
know me. They know I'm very frank. What you see is what you get.
So it's not no relation to the Frankfurt School.
No, but I have been to Frankfurt, and it's a pretty amazing place, but I don't know the Frankfurt School.
And by the way, if you wonder who just snuck in, that's Jess Pagliese. That's right, Jessica Pagliese.
I'm a big fan of Jess.
Who's once again subbing for the great Ellen Thurston.
Just so you know, I dropped in one day and donated $50 when Ephraim was on the radio, and he was doing such an incredible mix of music.
That's right. That's In the Cut with Ephraim Asili.
Oh, yeah.
Good
genius,
show.
Genius show. So, now it's the Frank Institute at CR10, and I'm a founding director and artistic director, and I'm 6 years there now. You know, I bought the building and spent a couple years rebuilding it, and I programmed it now for 5 years, and over 100 artists from all over the world in every discipline other than oil painting, probably, have been in and out.
You've never had an oil painting on the walls there?
I don't believe we've had an oil painting yet. Would you have one that you'd like to show?
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to show it.
Really? You have an oil painting?
Yeah, from when I was about 12. It's in the attic somewhere. Growing older as I stay young.
Well, you look young. Yeah, you sound young.
I sound, that's better. So how many shows do you have left for the... Do you plan in terms of seasons? Do you have two seasons?
It's a season, yeah. It starts in... this year it started at the end of May with a 25-year retrospective of Judy Pfaff, who's an installation artist, probably known for creating the medium of installation art, and she did an installation of about 12,000 square feet of her work over 25 years that she built on site over a couple of years. And Judy's a genius. We know each other since Tribeca. We were neighbors about 40 years. We lived in the art world days in there together. And then on the lower floor, we showed a lot of works on paper. So it was a really incredible show called Grasshopper, curated by David Ebony. So the three of us kind of worked together over a long period of time to put the show up, and it stayed up a couple of months. And today we just took the last two pieces of sculpture down. And Judy is well-known at Bard. She's was head of the art department for a long time. She's still on staff there, and she has a compound in Germantown and is a very... She was a MacArthur Fellow, Judy. She is really a visionary, and the show was brilliant. And so after that, in parallel to that, really, there were a lot of events. So music and readings, Carter Radcliffe read, and we had Black Lake did a show, an installation, and... I can hardly remember everybody, but every weekend there's been an event, and so I have three more weekends. This weekend.
What do you got?
This weekend is a school group called Fan Letters, composed of Alex Nathanson and Dylan Neely, and they're collaborating with an artist named Jonas Bears, who lives in the area. Around Kingston, and they're kind of geniuses. He reached out to me from the internet. I think Jonas is friends with a lot of people in the region. Music, they all come out of what we call multidisciplinary. They build They build sculptures that make sound, and then they sort of work independently of each other. They've Fan Letters has just been on the road touring. And Jonas tours a lot on his own. He started in the 90s, kind of building instrumentation from what we call, analog salvage of sound. And then he moved into video equipment. And he worked as a DJ. He did mixing. He played violin when he was a kid. And Alex and Dylan have their own duo called Fan Letters, and they tour, and they also make interactive multimedia performance, and they create the electronic instrumentation, and they kind of work with all types of that interactive media, so video, sound, film, riffing, sampling, and then the objects that they make, which is kind of one of them like that. So kind of really smart guys.
And that begins this weekend?
That's Saturday, 5 o'clock, 5 p.m. It's a $10 ticket at the door.
No prices.
Oh, no prices. Oh, well.
It's okay.
Oh, my goodness. I forgot to read the on-the-air. Yes, please.
That's
read.
Okay. That's all right.
And they'll play one show. So they're coming on Friday. On Saturday, they're going to set up the whole video. There's, I've got a big 10-by-10-foot video screen I built in there, so they'll work with that. And there's a stage that Brian DeWan and I built a couple of years ago, a big 12-by-12-foot stage that they'll work on. And, the space has all been blacked out for them, and they'll set up and do a show, and then they'll hit the road. So that's this Saturday, 5 o'clock. Yeah.
What's the number on?
283 County Route 10. County Route 10. Just go. It's about 6 miles now, from Hudson, off of 9G South, in Linlithgow.
You're only open for your events, or?
Yeah, I mean, usually open. This past weekend we had a really big event curated by some New York artist curators called The Sound Behind You. And Rachel Rampelman and Karsten Krijharik and Vanessa Albury, they put together a show of 34 artists, and we installed the show Thursday, Friday. It was a weekend event all day Saturday and Sunday, and mostly it was a lot of video, digital arts, and some performance, and it sort of was all about the history of the naturalist enthusiasm and, reflections on the area. And so it was a lot of very experimental videos, some virtual reality that was pretty amazing. So a very kind of high level of a lot of super good video work.
Cool.
So that was grueling, all that tech. I mean, 7,500 square feet of down the center, all the Mika players and the cords and the this, and that was really funny. That was an installation in its own, all the stuff. So that came down on Sunday night, and then...
So was your background based in the city more in installation and performance art than...
Yeah.
Traditional?
Yes. My practice is, I consider myself to be, interdisciplinary, kind of rooted in old school of the, I grew up with the DIA Foundation group of artists, PS1, those were all my family and friends. So that kind of, I went from performance in the late, mid to late 70s, which I mostly did for video documentation, but I programmed a lot in the club scene. So I chose the alternative starting with Mutt Club in 77, and I worked in all the clubs. I knew all the people there. And so I produced a lot of underground culture in the club life as a parallel relationship, kind of pre-East Village, quote-unquote, performance art, And, it was such a small scene then, and so I did a lot of performance for the documentation, wrote, and a lot of my colleagues, my generation of artists in New York, all participated, and I actually have a really incredible archive, I'd love for you to come and look at it one day, of all the work from 77 to 1990 of a entity that was pre-CR10 called Jungle Red Studios, and it's all video and photographs and everything. It's all museum sleeved and digitized, and it's an archive of the period of a lot of contemporary artists, many of who have passed on, but some are still living, Nan Golden, Cookie Mueller, you know, a lot of people from the underground, from the downtown scene that were all kind of family.
So you saw the transition from club-based to gallery-based?
Then I started making installations kind of in the late 80s. I moved to Europe. I did a lot of work there. And mostly the subjects that interest me are metaphysics and types of code, very simplifications of the Hermetic and, you know, patterning and social, sexual anthropology. Those are kind of the consistent themes in my work. And I'm actually going to be putting up two bodies of work in September, and I invite you both to come. I'm going to have some people come and look at the I'm going to have some studio visits. So, you know, CR10 Arts was a conceptual art project for me. You know, I wanted to sort of address the function of the Kunsthalle in the 21st century, which, of course, doesn't really have a function, but, you know, they still do exist randomly throughout the universe.
So and you do your own work there. That's what you do, your own artwork there.
Yeah,
as well.
My studio is in the back. Oh, I have a 2,000 square foot studio in the back, which contains my archive and all my work over 40 years. And and then the rest of the building is used for exhibitions. So I'm there, you know, year round. And so over the 5 years, it was really about, you know, buy, build, program and archive. So the mission of the Frank Institute in the end really became defined for me as something that parallels my practice, which is process, practice, form, and archive. And so I think that what we're all left with, as you know, being so passionate about the archiving of what you're doing here, sound, wave, and all of that, and the wave farm and all of the things that it, the archive is kind of all we have left in many ways. And so I do have a massive archive. My husband, Daniel Rothbard, who's also an artist, he heads out for Germany today. He's got two shows in Aachen at the Ludwig Forum there. And he's been very generous in helping me do all the video and photographic archive of all the exhibitions over the 5 years. So the plan was 5 years, and then that was that project. And then the Frank Institute would be in place. And so now a lot of the focus is building bridges with other non-for-profits, curators, institutions. So I'm working with two or three people who have proposed bringing exhibitions from Europe or from traveling in museums. Who it will be sort of what Judy kind of opened the door for, one artist up for a longer period of time, and then sort of people bringing other types of interdisciplinary events over the season. Wow. Yeah, because I'd like to go back to my own work.
Yeah. But,
and also, you know, I think that the more you extend something, the more active it will become, and, you know, we'll see if it can. I'm not a big grant writer, so I think there's other ways of sustaining things. So the collaborative relationship that I have, I still live in New York. I have a home there, and so, you know, I know a lot of people from my life in New York all my life, and in Europe. I lived in Europe 10 years. So, you know, I think that's what makes it exciting for me, keeping it very open and the international world of art, architecture. So there's four programs in the mission, and there are four projected. So they're everything from archival programs to architecture, art and architecture, to performative programs as well as installation art. So, you know, those programs I share with curators and other institutions who may want to essentially take the role of the creative, and then we collaborate on, I'm more the managing operational budget of how things happen. Mm-hmm. And that's a role that I enjoyed, collaborating with one entity rather than, so I'm really not a curator. I never really curated any, but I think all good artists are good curators. You got to edit your own work, right?
So what are the two other shows you have this summer?
Well, the two other events are, next weekend is an artist that lives in the region, Elliot Green. He's a surrealist painter of great respect and a lovely person. I met him through CR10, and he has shown, I think last year he had a big show with John Davis. And he did a collaboration with a multidisciplinary performance artist named Colin Gee. And Colin does a lot of traveling around the world, theater and performance and music, and they became friends. And so they took all of some of Elliot's paintings, and they animated them, and then Colin did this sort of interactive, performative work within and put some music. So it's a screening of a series of those short pieces.
Oh, so there won't be oil paintings on the wall.
No, not. He didn't hit me up to bring the oil paintings in yet, but I'm sure it's on his agenda. But, you know, so that's next weekend on Saturday and at 4 o'clock. And then the following Saturday, the last event is Robert C. Morgan, who is a well-known critic and a painter as well. He's got a show, I think, opening up on Labor Day with Carrie Haddad, he told me, of his paintings. He's sort of an abstract, minimalist painter. Well-known poet, won a lot of prizes, but mostly he's known as a very major critic in contemporary art for a lot of magazines and also, you know, books, catalogs, you know, catalog resume, real scholarly person. And he's written poems since he was young, and he's reading.
Like Carter Radcliffe.
Yeah, he was at Carter's. Carter's reading was great.
I really wanted to go.
We filmed it.
Oh, good.
And it's online. You can see it on the CR10 page.
I freaked him out one day. I saw him walking down the street, and I just read two of his poems in the Baffler, the magazine The Baffler, and I said, oh, those poems are good. And he looked at me like I came from another planet, because I don't know him from Adam, you know.
He's a shy fellow, you know, he read in the midst of Judy's installation, so the video is really good, and it is online. Daniel edited, and a man named David Lackey shot it, and it's, no, Daniel shot it, that was another thing. So it's a really good video of him reading in the space, and there's also on the CR10 page a artist talk that we did with Judy Pfaff and David Ebony, the curator, and Portia Munson and Jim Yowie, who is a well-known dealer from New York who did many, many shows with Judy over the last 35 years. And Portia is an artist who shows with PPOW. And David is a critic and curator. He writes for Art in America. And so we did a panel discussion, artist talk. Judy's very funny. She gets going. She's really funny. So that is that was an incredible experience. Who would have believed that 85 people would show up for an artist talk?
That's
on a hot
great
day. So yeah, it was really good, and the filming of it and the Q&A was good. Very, very insightful.
So when you were deciding to create CR10, was it what inspired you to move locally? Up here, was it the presence already of a lot of artists in this area?
Well, to be frank, I didn't know. I only know the area from my very good friend Mark McDonald, who I've known for 40 years, and we shared a lot of friends who have since passed on, who had studios and things. And I used to visit here in the early 80s. One weekend, I was staying at Mark's house with Daniel for some event that was out in Chatham, and we'd come up for the weekend, and I literally drove by the building. I wasn't looking for anything. I drove by the building, and there was a cell phone number in the building, which I called, and nobody replied. And then, like, I don't know, 3 months later, we came up for a weekend again, and there was a broker number, and I called, and he met me, and I just had a vision, to be honest. Everything in the building I kind of saw from my car. It was kind of like that. I didn't really have a plan.
Well, these sort of things, they're just, Manhattan's too expensive for this anymore, right? I mean, you couldn't really...
You couldn't do this. You couldn't have a 15,000-square-foot building. I couldn't, let me say that point blank. I could not have a 15,000-square-foot building. But I had a very big place in Tribeca for 34 years, and I ran, you know, I had a business that supported me as an artist, and I did a lot of performance, as I mentioned, a lot of art shows, a lot of things. So I had a couple of big places in Tribeca starting in 78, and I was there until 2011. So I didn't really, you know, think about moving up here, but it's beautiful. And, you know, in the 6 years that I've been here, it's changed radically. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot 6 years ago. There was Dia. There was Art Omai, you know. Mm-hmm. But the schoolhouse is fabulous. All the galleries, you know, Dodge. I love the new Kristen Dodge gallery, the September gallery.
I was going to ask you about
it's
that.
It's a great,
yeah.
Great addition. She's fabulous.
Oh, yeah.
Totally fabulous. Really smart lady. And, you know, Jeff Bailey is a big addition from from New York to come up here. A couple of my friend Walter Robinson just had a show there that was very, and Dylan Langwell, who is a sound artist and sculptor. So that's exciting. And the Gilded Owl, which has a mix of kind of contemporary art and very collectible design. So it has changed mm-hmm. quite a lot in sure. the last 5 years. I don't know how much. I wish we had a bigger audience. I think that the audience is what we hope will increase, too.
Yeah, I think that's happening.
Yeah.
You know, more and more people coming up from the city.
Exactly.
Having the train here helps a lot for people. It's amazing on a Friday night to see the influx of people.
And, you know, I don't know if you've had a chance, but the show at the show at Olana that opened on about the architecture.
Fantastic.
The different artists who did a rendering of the summer house that was unfinished by beautiful show.
It's
James
beautiful.
Smith
a beautiful
was
book
very
of
involved.
It too as well. Booklet.
Jane Smith, from the Smith Space, who's right. here, and it really, I thought it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did a beautiful small catalog, very nice. Yeah.
Well, we've been talking to Francine Hunter McGivern. We're going to have to
thank
switch
you
to
so
the
much.
News. Thank you for coming
so
in.
I hope you'll come out.
Definitely.
With Joseph and Beers, 5 o'clock this Saturday.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you. CR10 and Lynn Lithgow.